The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning. I'm going to be reading from Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the seat of the sinners, nor sits in the seat of the sinners. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by the streams of water that yields forth its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like the chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning, Summit. How are we doing? Very good. It is someone's birthday today. I'm not going to point anyone out or put them on the spot. It's someone that drops things. That just means you're human. I don't believe you're 75. No one here believes you're 75. Stop it. You're good. You're good. It's really great. Thank you. Thanks, Doug. Good morning. If you don't know me, my name is Nathan Forrest. I've had the privilege of being a part of Summit for a really long time, and in a variety of ways and means. And if we have not met, I would love to meet you and hang out. Right now, my life is—I don't know about yours. My life is pretty full. I work at a little school down the road called Southside Christian School, which I just found out is going to be playing against Easley or Powdersville. Which one? Powdersville. Cool. Yeah, we're gonna compete and lose. We just landed graduation. I don't know if you've ever been related to someone or if you've worked in education, you know the end of every school year is pretty psychotic. And my role on the team over at Southside Christian is I am the director of discipleship, whatever that means. And I get introduced as the campus pastor of a school, which I don't know how to get them to stop introducing me that way, because I'm like, I have no pastoral authority over anyone here. No one listens to me, nor should they probably, because we're a school. And but I get to, when I think about today's June 2nd. When I think about June 2nd, what it feels like to be in June 2nd, as a parent, I have three wonderful children, 14, 12, 10. And when I think about what it is to be a parent on June 2nd, after the school year has landed, and as a educator working in education on June 2nd, life is crazy. And you just want to rest. You just want to take a breath and be like, please, world, can we just slow down for a little bit? And there's this question of like, what are we doing over the summer? And for Summit Church, we're going through the Psalms. And what I get to do today is kind of give this preface of why are we doing the Psalms? How are we supposed to approach our time together? And it's almost like this teaser trailer slash if you've ever gone skiing or snowboarding and you've had to do the lift for a little bit and you're like, all right, as you're about to go on the lift and you see the lift chair coming around, that first time is a little bit scary. And there's a couple of things like, all right, when you sit down, you just sit down, you let it carry you, then you put the gate down, and then we're going to go on a ride up a mountain and see some really beautiful, gorgeous things. I feel like that's kind of what we're doing this morning. And so this morning, we're going to be splitting up my talking. I'm going to talk for 8 minutes and 45 more seconds. And then we're going to sing some songs and meditate on Psalm 1. And then I'm going to talk for 10 more minutes and we're going to meditate on Psalm 2. So when I get down, we're not done, all right? Don't get too excited. So I'm just helping your expectations, all right? So I've got 8 more minutes to talk about Psalm 1. Here we go. Before we talk about Psalm 1, I want to talk about a little bit of, this isn't, This is just me cracking open my shell so you know the heart space, brain space that I have been in as I have stepped into Psalm 1. The beginning of my school year, and my role is a part administrator, part counselor, and part pastor. The beginning of my school year began with three wonderful young gals in our school losing a parent. It was pretty awful. If you pay attention to youth culture and statistics, I think the most recent statistic is about 60% of adolescents would be, if they were to diagnose every single adolescent in America, 2 in 3 would be diagnosed with a moderate anxiety disorder. I have had to have conversations with about body dysmorphia. I have had to make reports to DSS this year. I have had to go to multiple funerals this year. And my spirit, and I have sat in the room with faculty members and parents and teachers and students across the board, broken, tired, and I feel that weight. And the question is, how do we, in this moment of respite, how do I survive? I don't do that to be braggadocious. I do that because I'm like, I work a normal job, and you have live a normal life. Life is just heavy. Like, I want to acknowledge, whatever you are doing, I feel alongside you the heaviness of life. Even just being a parent, the beauty of having older children is you see them flourish and grow and be delightful young ladies. And my son's just a goober. But you see them, but also you watch them have to grapple with more complex and heavy issues in life. And I carry that. Parents, we carry that, right? So how do we go forward? I love Psalm 1. Psalm 1 begins with this. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. You see, book one of the Psalms opens up with two Psalms that do not have a known author, which means we're intended to read them as prologues. And so the first framework of Psalm, as he begs this question of us, is giving this contrasted lifestyles. Who are you listening to? If your brain space was boiled down to an algorithm, what a crazy idea. But if we were to encapsulate all of your brain space and what your mind dwells on and meditates and who you listen to and what you scroll through, and if we were to boil it down to its essence, what the psalmist is saying here is what you pay attention to matters. Your attention has value in the context of eternity, and it affects your life in the context of eternity. Blessed is the one who does not walk, stand, or sit. And you notice the slowing momentum, walking where it's this idea of blessed is the one who doesn't just slowly become enmeshed, caught up, content even, with wickedness, which is looking that which is evil and declaring it to be right and pursuing that. With the way of sinners, which is standing in the way in which you know and are fully aware of, like, this is off. This is not as it should be. And then scoffing. Scoffing is the mindset of propping myself up of, like, I don't need to participate in bringing restoration or healing here. I just get to mock it. Which is the spirit of our age, is it not? Blessed is the one who doesn't live there, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. The Torah is like the Hebrew word for it, and on his Torah he meditates day and night. You remember when love letters were a thing? there's 3 month season right before Emily and I got engaged, where I lived in this wonderful country called Kenya, and in the backwoods of Kenya, they did not have internet access. And so once a week, we would go into town, and I would every night, this is young love, y'all. I would write a full-page letter to my bride-to-be. She didn't know she was my bride. I was going to propose one. Anyway, but I would write a full-page letter to her of, like, the events of the day every single day, and then I would go into town, and I would just... Like the meme, right? Jim Carrey just clacking it out. And that was what I would do for about an hour. And then I would print off all of the letters she had sent me. And then I would go back. And it's that delighting in the instruction of the Lord is this sheer joy of getting insight and hearing from someone beloved to you. That is what he is saying. It's this contrast of where's your brain at? Like, blessed is the one whose delight is cracking open these words. And y'all, I've been, this spring, my rhythm is the bell rings at 8:05 and I take 10 minutes because it's the first quiet 10 minutes of my day and crack it open. And there is this in the Southside's full of a lot of gaps and problems and crisis and drama that's all bigger than me. And it's like, Lord, like, I just need Jesus right now. Just something to set my firm to. And this is the idea. He's like, blessed is the one who gets to delight in hearing from the Lord, the instruction of the Lord, the words of the Lord. And on his law, he meditates day and night. It is not the picture of a monk. The word for meditate is, gents, do you know that, you know, guys, you're going to relate to me. You know how you could be driving next to your wife and your brain just starts rolling? Like, you're not thinking about anything. Well, you're thinking about something, and then it goes for 5 minutes on this rabbit trail, and your brain is just navigating all these things, and you land on a conclusion, and you're not, it's not vocal, it's just in your head. And you kind of drive, and you're like, And your wife looks at you, she's like, what? And you're like, selling the Jeep was the worst mistake I've ever made. And you're like, that sound you make when you land on a conclusion after the end of a long rabbit trail, as ridiculous as it might be most of the time, and you're like, And what's that? That sound is the sound. That Hebrew word for meditate is the equivalent of that sound. It sounds similar to the sound of that we make when we're like the what is it? Kyle Caton calls it the spiritual yummies. When someone is saying something, you're like, and he's like, that's what the Hebrew word sounds like. It's this idea of, like, blessed is the one who throughout the day is dwelling on the things of God and the words of God, even in the back of your mind, and you land, and you're like, that's so good. It's like, that person is blessed. It is great for that person. Why? They're like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in season. Its leaf doesn't wither, and all they do, they prosper. The wicked are not so, but they're like the chaff of the wind. They're like the chaff that the wind drives away. And I want to draw this contrast because it is so easy if you grew up in the church to view Bible reading or Bible study or Bible memorization in this, like, categorical legalistic mindset of, like, I gotta check the boxes. But what the psalmist is laying out here, he's like, no. It is much more like an intimate relationship, and the flourishing comes not from me doing the things so that God likes me a little bit more and that I get a gold star by my name in Sunday school class, but instead, that's where my brain goes, but instead it is this idea of the end result of living and having an integrated rhythm of drawing my mind to the things of the Lord. The result is good for my soul. You're like a tree planted by streams of water. It is fruitful. It yields its fruit in season. Your life produces wonderful things as a result of intimacy with the Lord. And there's a resilience. Like, I love this metaphor because it's understood. The heat comes. Summer comes. Y'all, it's coming. Today's really, really nice outside. It's like, cling to it because it's not going to happen until November. And but, like, those 98-degree days are coming. It's going to wither, right? And no, the leaf doesn't wither, and all he does. The wicked are not so, but are like the chaff the wind drives away. We fear insignificance. We hate it. And the psalmist says, to listen to the fleeting voices of this world and to cling to, I have to discover my own truth or my own life. I have to find my own meaning in my own way. Only results in impermanence. In the heat of summer, the chaff is the dust that the lawnmower is throwing out. No one cares about it. It doesn't matter. That's our fear. And therefore, the end result, the wicked will not stand in the judgment. A life where we are dependent on our own selves to find our own way results in a life where we will be insufficient on the day of judgment. Sinners, the wicked won't stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteousness. It leads to isolation. For the Lord, and this is the contrast, the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Why meditate on the Psalms? Like, why does my regular integration of the words of God in my life matter? Because by walking the path with Jesus, you get to be known by Jesus. You get to experience what it is to be known by him, even in the midst of the turmoil and the storms and our own insufficiency all along the way. The reason the tree thrives is not because it's a great tree that never fails. The reason the tree thrives is because it's proximate to life, because it's near the water. And so, like, this summer, and after the summer, and in these next couple minutes, we get to meditate. So this is what I'll ask. If you would you bow your heads? In the midst of your things, and I want, if it helps, like, have a picture in your mind of a server's tray and just take all of the things that you feel you're responsible for, all the problems you're trying to figure out. Just take them off the table of your mind. Put them on the tray. The Lord knows them. And the Lord is sitting at the table across from you. And Jesus wants and calls us to just talk to him, to hear from him, that we might know him and be known by him. As we sing this next song, my invitation, either proclaim thanks to him in this, or listen. May we be a people that cherish this space with Jesus.
My name is Emma Mayforest, and I'm Pastor Nathan's daughter. I'll be reading the Psalms chapter 2. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them up in their derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell of the decree. The Lord said to me, "You are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them, and with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore, King, O kings, be wise, be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in him."
Amen. The second psalm helps frame and gives a needed parenthesis as we approach the rest of this book. If the first psalm fixates and dials in on the thoughts of my own heart and the rhythm of my own life, a necessary question that results when I think about how I am navigating the tumult of life in the midst of all these things that are complicated and nuanced. All right, so Psalm 1 is like, all right, this is how you live your life. This is what you think about matters, the way in which you live your life, what you are dwelling on matters. Be intimate with the Lord, yes. But if you're paying attention, you finish Psalm 1, you're like, that's great, I can move towards that, but also this world's pretty big, and there's a whole lot I don't control. And it's unplanned prior to the court verdicts of this week. Like, you don't have to go very far to hear one side or another decrying the death of America, or all is lost, or what have you. Kings and courtrooms and powers that be, who are we? And if your brain lives there for a little bit, it's very easy to feel powerless and hopeless. So why worship? Why does this space, why does this time, why does this gathering, and why does living in this matter? And the psalmist in Psalm 2 answers that. Why do the nations rage and the people plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed one, saying, "Let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us." To be a citizen in a world where you feel like all the powers that be have completely postured themselves against anything that is good. We didn't invent that in 2024. Surprise. It's not our generation that decided, hey, God, we don't need you. We're going to figure this out on our own. No, we have not invented this path in 2024. As early as the Psalms, as honestly as far back as you go, as soon as individuals have power, there's this sneaky lie that builds into our hearts that we don't need God. And this is the solace that we take. We're like, okay, so what God is saying is, like, he's looking at these rulers, he's looking at the powers that be, he's looking at the people of influence. And y'all, I feel the frustration. I feel the angst. I get to sit with students that are under the power and authority of administrators and faculty and parents, and there's this frustration of, I don't feel like they are for me. I feel like I am the victim, and I feel like I'm utterly powerless to do anything about it. And so we experience this reality both on the macro scale as we look at nations committing unspeakable atrocities against one another, right? And there's nothing we can do about it. Like, we listen to my kids and I listen to the Pour Over podcast, which is like an 8-minute, 3 times a week news from a Christian worldview, and they're just saying the news. It's delightful. Anyway, free plug there. It's unendorsed. But what happens is you're like, good gracious, the world's falling apart. No one seems to care. And I can't fix it. And so there's like the big macro scale, but then there's also the deeply personal scale where I speak with friends who have bosses that have no care about what is right, and there's nothing they can do about it. Or spouses that are absolutely the victims of gross abuse and neglect, and there's this feeling of I can't do anything about it. Yeah. What is God's response to people in positions of power and authority that are seemingly untouchable? He who sits in heaven laughs at their plans. The Lord holds them in derision. He treats them like a toddler throwing a tantrum. He is that degree of threatened by them. I remember my parents, they tell this story of one of my brothers when he was a toddler, and he wasn't getting what he would want. And he had this plan of attack to get what he wanted from my parents, and it was he would just hold his breath. He just wouldn't breathe. He's like, I'm just gonna stop until you give me what I want. And like my parents, they tell the story of how they took him to the doctor. They're panicking. Our son's not breathing when he's mad. What do we do? And the doctor's like, he'll breathe. Like, just give it time. He'll breathe. You'll be fine. Just don't worry about it. And sure enough, you can't hold your breath until you're like, you're going to be fine. And so this is kind of like, I have that picture of my little brother holding his breath as an 18-month-old. I refuse. I will not do this. I'm going to hold my breath until you give me what I want. And that's like the kings and the powers of the world. What are you going to do to us? And God's looking at them and he's like, I don't think you understand how this works. I'm God. I take you that seriously. And then he will speak to him in his wrath and terrify them in his fury. And there's a part of me where we're like, I don't like the idea of God being angry. But then there's the other part of me that makes reports to DSS about parents. And I see evil being gotten away with. And the lie that the enemy wants to plant in my mind is God doesn't care. They get away with it in the end. Do you guys remember Kony 2012? Those of you that are old, I'm dating myself. There was this huge campaign, Kony, if you remember, going back to the dark ages, in 2012, there was this huge social media campaign where Kony is this warlord in Africa, where he has committed basically every atrocity you could think of. Genocide, mass children enslavement, abuse, children prostitution, rape, all these terrible things. All the bad things. And there's this huge worldwide campaign of we're going to stop Kony. 12 years later, we don't have Kony. He's 63 years old. It's been 12 years. We have American government and military is pretty powerful. We have satellites doing all the things. He's fine. It's infuriating. God is not emotionally neutral when he sees evil. When he sees power abusing its influence on the lives of the innocent, God is not emotionally neutral. That's what you need to hear. He will terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. Heel, that's the southern coming through. And if you want scriptural context for this, what the second psalm is doing is it's referencing 2 Samuel. So if you read 2 Samuel, some of the language there's a lot of parallels. We don't have time for it right now. But he says this, I will tell the decree, the Lord has said to me, you are my son, today as I have begotten you. Ask of me and I will make the nations, plural, your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them into pieces like a potter's vessel. There's a whole lot going on here, but in essence, what the author is reminding us here is that the story has an ending. It is written. It is finalized. The roles have been cast. The scene is already set. We are simply waiting for it to play out. And what he is speaking to is another seductive lie of the enemy, is that it is always going to be this way. God doesn't have a plan. God doesn't see. It's just going to continue forever. God doesn't care because you do not see God enacting justice right now. And what the author is reminding us here is, thank goodness, is that the ending is sure. It is as sure. God sees the present, the future reality, as clearly as he sees the present reality, because in God's mind, being outside of time, the present, the future is the present. Does that make sense? And so God, when he sees, I'm mad right now at what is happening, he is also seeing his perfect wrath and justice play out on the evildoers. And so what the author is saying is, there is a good king. His coming is sure, and justice will have its day. And God's righteousness and goodness will play out to the ends of the earth. And the earth is round. I don't know if the author knew that or not, but like, the earth is round. So that means the whole earth, right? And we rest there. We all carry the wounds and scars of people that had authority and influence over us, and we were the victims. And we don't all see justice. And we all feel the weight of evil in this jacked up world. And we see it influence and affect innocent people, and we see it affect people we care deeply about. And it is what this psalmist is doing, and why worship matters, is because it realigns our hearts and our minds and our fears. It aligns them to what is true. Jesus is king. His wrath is sure. But it's not just wrath unrestrained. It is wrath that runs on the path of love and rightness. Now, therefore, O kings, presidents, justices, lawyers, employers, dads, administrators. O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. A right fear. It's easy to believe the lie that fear is bad. Nope, if you're on the edge of the Grand Canyon, I've been there recently, there's a right fear that you need, that you want your kids to have when you're walking along the edge of the Grand Canyon, right? Because they are in the presence of something that can devastate them. And there is a right emotional reaction that it evokes when you understand the magnitude of the gap between me and something that is glorious, something that is bigger than me. There is a right and necessary feeling and emotion that it evokes. But if your feeling and emotion is evoked by what is not grand, so for example, a spider that's not going to kill you, right? Like, that misalignment will affect your life. But here's a sweet piece that we're invited to, and that God's people are invited to in Psalm 2. And it's the feeling of when I was growing up on a farm, my dad, I was 4 years old, and my dad is taking me with him out into the pasture to get up the dairy cows so that way they could be milked. I'm four. I'm all of 40 pounds, probably less than that because I'm short. And so, but this is the reason I was okay, as I'm like this little kid like kicking this huge cow that's 20 times my size. The reason I was okay and the reason I felt safe was because I knew those cows were really scared of my dad. I was going to be all right. And what Psalm 2 invites you and me into as we stand together in worship is the King, he who is in you, is grander and more powerful than he who is in this world. And worship realigns how I walk in the midst of the storm. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish on the way. His wrath is quickly kindled. That is directed towards those in power and authority. You're not the king. And this last line. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. Would you bow with me? Dear Heavenly Father, you are not an absentee dad. Deism is wrong. You have not left us to find our own way. You have not left us to fend for ourselves. Thank you. Thank you for Jesus. He's the good king that came and experienced what it is to be oppressed. And he was the victim. He was the sacrifice. But he did not remain there. You have set him high above every power and every authority, and now we are simply waiting for this final chapter to resolve where we have peace. And so, Lord, in these next few moments, as we stand and worship together, may you bring peace to our hearts through a right fear of Jesus, whose power transcends anything we could possibly imagine, alongside his steadfast affection for his people. Lord, may we find peace there, even as we proclaim his power and glory. For my sweet brothers and sisters, Lord, as we go throughout this week, may we be reminded of these truths. May they be integrated into the pattern of our lives. May we find rest from our fears. May we find solace and refuge in you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
A Psalm of David. Preserve me, O God. For in you I take refuge. I say to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have no good apart from you. As for the saints in the land, they are the excellent ones, in whom is all my delight. The sorrows of those who run after another god shall multiply. Their drink offerings of blood I will not pour out to take their names on my lips. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel in the night. Also, my heart instructs me. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my whole being rejoices. My flesh also dwells secure. For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, or let your Holy One see corruption. You make known to me the path of life. In your presence, there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.